Welcome to Overshare, a podcast and event series where we have honest conversations about the tough shit creatives don't publicly talk about often enough. We cover topics like creative insecurity, career failures, and how not to become a total douchebag when you finally gain some notoriety. Our goal is to get to know the creative industry beyond the highlights of portfolios and Instagram feeds, and to better understand the ups and, more importantly, the downs of what it takes to get there. Struggles we can all relate to, even if we haven't reached all-star status quite yet. Overshare was created by Working Not Working, an invite-only community that connects companies with the universe's most respected, most awarded, and hardest-working creatives in advertising, design, production, and tech. Companies like Apple, Airbnb, Droga5, and the New York Times use Working Not Working to discover and hire talent for freelance and full-time gigs. Learn more at workingnotworking.com. This episode of Overshare is brought to you by our friends at AndCo. Now, if you haven't tried it yet, it's pretty sweet. It's a combination of a smart app and a real human to help you run your freelance business. You get a personal chief operator to help you with all the things creative brands typically hate managing, like invoices and time tracking, expenses, and even projects. It makes admin work actually fun. It's a pretty sweet text interface, too. And it was also co-founded by Working Not Working member Leif Abraham. And we like supporting our members, so we hope you will, too. Feel free to try it out and get 20% off for 3 months on all premium memberships with the code WNW. And you can go to and.co to redeem that. And it's .co, not .com. I don't even know where to go from there. I feel like we're done. Let's just all get a drink and call it a night. This seems so PC after that. Hey, I'm Justin Genak, co-founder of Working Not Working. This is a recording from our fourth live Overshare event and the first one we've done in San Francisco. When thinking about doing Overshare, Jennifer Daniel and Jessica Hish were two of the first people that came to mind. And this was definitely my biggest challenge yet. How do you get two professional Overshares to share more than they already have in their 34,000 combined tweets and hundreds of Instagram and blog posts? But don't worry, they definitely did. I was excited to talk to them, not only because they are incredibly talented designers and illustrators, but because they both recently had children in the past couple years. So Jessica had Ramona, and Jen had twins Fox and Philomena. As someone who doesn't have children and is not a woman, I was curious on how having kids affects you as a creative, along with how it affects your career. And I definitely got what I asked for. I'm sure there were moments when people in the audience could see my face go from shock to awe when hearing about some of the finer points about pregnancy. So fair warning, this isn't your typical design talk about favorite typefaces and what inspires you. It gets very real. Also, I'd like to extend my apologies to Jessica's friends Stuart, Sarah, and Skylar Scott Curran, who drove an hour to come see us and couldn't get in because the bar venue wouldn't allow kids. And I'm from New York and people bring their kids everywhere, so I didn't realize that would be an issue. So sorry to those guys. And I've been told that Skylar's actually the coolest kid ever, so I'm bummed I didn't get to meet her. Speaking of kids, if you have some nearby right now, you may want to stop listening. It gets pretty profane at times, and Jen starts us off with a bang right in the first minute. So there's your warning. With that said, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Jessica Hish and Jennifer Daniel. And when I was thinking of oversharers, obviously I thought of you two. You put in your bio, you say like professional oversharer, aren't you?
Yeah, I think it's on there.
It's on there. You guys, you're kind of...
I'm just an amateur.
You're just an amateur? After tonight, you'll be a pro. But
I think technically I get paid to overshare, which makes me a professional.
I'll sign up for that newsletter.
It's a good newsletter. So when I was thinking, obviously, of overshares, I was thinking of YouTube. And then I realized how much pressure it is now to try to get people who overshare all the time to say something that they haven't really already put out there. So we're going to try to talk about some of the things that maybe you haven't covered in your 34,000 tweets combined, which is an impressive stat. And
we've been on Twitter for a while.
A while.
It's more like the years add up. We didn't sign up last year.
Fair enough. But it's like 17,000 tweets. It's a lot.
Yeah, I guess.
That doesn't compare.
It doesn't compare.
No, right. I don't think so.
For those of you who don't know who Jessica and Jennifer are, Jennifer Daniel is, as of a month ago, 40 days ago, creative director at Google and an unknown special ops team, and formerly at the New York Times and graphics director of Bloomberg Business Week, your first children's book, Space Infographics. Or should I, it has an exclamation point, so I say space or yell it?
It's like Jeb, exclamation point.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Your first book, Space, exclamation point, Infographics, was published in February by Templar Publishing and debuted as number one new release in children's astronomy books. Jennifer has also been recognized by many fancy design, illustration, and journalism awards, blah, blah, blah. That's in your bio. Okay. Jessica Hish is a lettering artist and author with a tendency to overshare. and a penchant for procrastinating. Her first book, In Progress, is available many places online. Amazon. It's on the Amazons.
It's on
your
Amazons.
Website. Yep. Jessica's client list includes Wes Anderson, David Eggers, Penguin Books, New York Times, Tiffany Co., and many other people. We all know who these two are, so let's welcome them. All right. So we don't want this to be like our therapy session up here and just be like crying and have you guys just sitting out there awkwardly. So we're going to try to warm it up with some easy questions.
You got some icebreakers?
Icebreakers from James Lipton's favorite curse word.
My favorite curse word is probably fuck. But my favorite iteration of it is the, like, slow realization fuck, where you're like, fuck.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Cunt.
Wow.
Strong.
And we broke the ice. We broke the ice, guys. That's Jennifer Daniel. Welcome. That's a preview of things to come.
Cunt.
I don't even know where to go from there. I feel like we're done. Let's just all get a drink and call it a night. This seems so PC after that.
Yeah.
Favorite color?
I don't know. My previous favorite color was probably like that Ames red-orange color, which I literally use for everything.
Yeah,
but
solid.
I feel like now I'm kind of vibing on some more neutrals because of like Northern California style. I don't know. It's probably like chambray is my favorite color right now.
All right, I like it. It's good.
Cunt. Oh,
I like that, Jen. Every time I look at you, I just see a horse wiener right there.
It should also be.
I get that a lot.
It should be noted too that Justin has a specific like directive on his thing that where the word over swear is crossed out because he swears too much on these things. So
Adam put that there.
Really
yeah, well, I didn't swear. You guys did.
Yeah.
All right. Other easy ones. Quick fire. San Francisco or New York?
New York.
I'm in Oakland now, so right. I'm going to say I feel like now that I'm East Bay,
yeah.
I'm coming over to this side.
Okay.
It took until the East Bay move.
You needed that to like...
wants all of us to move there so the house prices go back up.
No, like I felt like I was constantly trying to... Like people were... I couldn't not compare San Francisco to New York,
yeah.
And San Francisco would always fail. Because as a city, New York is better. Just on paper. I mean, there's no arguing it. It has better infrastructure.
Yeah.
There's more culture,
less
more thriving industries,
yeah.
You know, more diversity, like everything. But when I went to the East Bay, I was like, oh, this is... Everyone that says, oh, I love San Francisco. I climb Mount Tam every weekend. And I'm like, that's not San Francisco. So... Fair now enough. Now I love San Francisco because I actually just love the East Bay.
So you went with option C, Oakland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Do you really like Oakland more than Brooklyn?
No, I don't like Oakland more than Brooklyn. I don't know. Like Oakland for me now. I couldn't imagine moving back right now because I'm like, I've got a yard. I've got some situations
yeah.
worked out. Yeah.
I'm just trying to, because I know, you know, you have affinity for both.
Yeah. I like my life right now. And
well, it's like retiring.
I would want my life that I have here in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's possible because I'm not a kajillionaire.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I would rather have the life that I have here than not that life there currently.
Right. It's a cultural.
Yeah. My grand plan, though, is that when my kids no longer care about me, then I move back to New York, and I'm like one of those like mid-40s, like you know, New York people.
I like how you think your kids are going to give up on you in 10 years.
Oh, they absolutely. Do you guys remember being 12 and 13, where you're just like, "Bye, guys. See you when I'm 30."
Well, that's why I don't want to live in the city once I have kids that old, because I've seen kids.
Yeah.
And as soon as they can ride the subway, they're just going to be getting drugged up and sexed up all the time. And...
No, kids get drugged up and sexed up because they're bored, though. Like, there were way more drugged and sexed up people in my small town in Pennsylvania than I feel like in, I mean...
And, like, I'm knocking drugged up and sexed up like it's a bad thing. But
when
it's your
you're
children,
14,
yeah.
it's a 14, bad
it
idea.
Might be a bad thing, yeah.
I don't know.
Fair enough, yeah. Favorite thing about San Francisco?
I actually, it's
Oakland.
yeah, I mean, short answer. no, I'm a total softie for the weather aspect now.
Oh,
I will
come
say.
On.
No, I love seasons. I love seasons, but I fucking hate summer. I'm not a summer person. The only thing that is redeemable about summer in New York is summer nights, which is not a thing anymore as a parent.
No, I feel like the weather in New York weeds out the weak, and they all come here.
Yeah. And no, there's that whole, like, there's so many quotes about, like, you know, there's like 50 Mark Twain quotes about whatever.
One of the quotes is,
leave New York before it makes you hard and leave San Francisco before it makes you soft. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm soft now.
Yeah.
I need to, like, I need to have it just beat back into me that I'm, you know, I'd be cool with New York
summer. Back to New York. No, that's good.
Yeah.
That's great.
I have a strong
argument. We're talking about the weather now. They're bored out of their minds. We don't even know you're here. So this is a real tough question. What's your favorite Instagram filter?
I'm on no filter style right now. Nice. Mostly because I don't actually post
edgy,
like, beautiful photos on Instagram.
Okay.
I just am like...
Is there one called cunt? I won't say that again, maybe. I'm Jess. I don't know.
No filter. All right. We're going to go into the real questions now. So both of you share a lot online. Like, a lot. So I'm going to ask the one question that's on everyone's mind. What's wrong with you?
I'm in therapy right now because I'm in my 30s in San Francisco, and now I know more people that are in therapy than are not in therapy.
I
feel like that's not part of San Francisco culture. I think that's like a New Yorker thing.
I was just thinking about this today. I was like, I swear to God, San Francisco is getting more New York by the minute because we're all seeing analysts now.
Well, wait, are we seeing an analyst on Skype or are we seeing an analyst IRL?
IRL.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
What's an analyst?
That's the old New York term for a therapist.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. That sounds
like
cool.
I gotta go see my analyst.
All right.
You know,
said
that's
like a Jew.
No, like
it's my old. That's my Jewish New York analyst one.
All right.
It's my New York accent.
My next question is: what do your therapists have to say about your oversharing? Okay.
My therapist doesn't say anything in my sessions. Basically, it's just me dumping onto her, and then I leave. But
she tweeted me once.
Yeah.
That was weird. I had to fire her.
Jessica's therapist tweeted you?
Oh, yeah, Jessica's. No, no, my therapist. I thought it was assumed that everyone had a therapist.
No,
I talk about, like, my oversharing, I feel like, has to do with, like, some high school shit, of course, because everything in our whole life has to do with that.
Yeah.
But I feel like this thing when you were a teenager and, like, you had a secret... And, like, literally everyone had to know whatever that fucking secret was. And people would, like, get up your butt about it and bother you all the time and then make up shit about what your secret could be.
Yes.
And then the other people that were just, like, the unapologetic bitches would just be like, check out my new boyfriend. It's great. We sleep together all the time. And everyone would be like, I don't care about you. Just stop talking. And so I've tried to adopt the, like, that lifestyle of just... saying all the things so everyone just is like, I don't actually like need to know anymore because I'm assuming you're telling me all the things.
Yeah.
So
they don't dive any deeper.
They don't dive any deeper. They don't make any assumptions.
So what are you hiding?
I just have like a real need for like people to know me and not like make an assumption or like wrongly think of something that I would do.
That's fair. How about you, Jen?
I just insult myself before someone else can.
So it's like the Eminem 8 Mile approach. Wait, who's singing 8 Mile when you go up and you say all the things that they're going to rap about you anyway?
Yeah, just like that.
You have good parents.
Boycott Beyonce. Yeah, just like that.
Yeah, so it's the F&M model.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you guys, so you both for a long time have been on these social networks. What did you guys do to overshare before then? Like, what was your outlet?
I was an RA in college.
Okay.
So I had to do rounds.
Yeah.
I probably was just like, what are you guys doing? What are you working on? Oh, you want to know what I'm working on? And they're like, oh, I'm held captive in the dorms right now. Yeah. So that was probably it.
So you just talked at people?
Yeah, I just talked at people.
That'd be nice to you.
Like, I was also a computer lab monitor. So, like, everyone had to be, like, in the computer lab. I'm like, guys, what's going on? What are you working on? Let's talk about stuff.
So
and they're like, oh, I just have to print something. Quit talking to me.
Nobody got anything done because you were there.
Yeah, kind of.
No, that's good.
I mean, I was an RA, but not to overshare. It's because I was the only one who knew what weed smelled like. So
you were the best narc.
They were like, I think I smell weed. And I was like, nah, it's chill. Don't worry about that. Yeah, I don't know. I was like a debate nerd in high school. So that was like, there's some performative aspect to that I really like got off on.
Yeah. you're very funny on the Twitters. You both are, but you put a tweet out there. What was it about crying on the inside, babies?
Oh, when will my kids learn how to cry on the inside like mommy and daddy?
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's so insightful, too, yeah. At the same time.
They still don't.
Do you guys feel like you made a conscious decision at the beginning of your careers to put so much of yourself out there? Or were there any moments where you're like, hey, this is too much, or it's not enough, or hey, this is working, it's actually helping me raise my profile, get more work, any of that?
Well, I think one of the reasons, I just always made everything really personal whenever I put anything online, and part of that was to kill the detractors, because I think like when you're super curated and you're like putting everything together and it's really hyper professional and it's really like this is the end all be all volume that you should read, whatever, all the people that have a lot more knowledge and experience than you like basically come at you and are like, what do you think you're doing? Yeah. And like examine it and say you didn't, you know, pay homage to a zillion people, or you didn't cite the right sources, or you didn't do whatever.
Use the wrong word.
Yeah. And so keeping it really personal and really informal has made it so that when I actually do feel like sharing knowledge, I don't feel intimidated to share knowledge because I'm sharing it from my perspective. I'm not like trying to rewrite the book on whatever.
Right.
You're like really good at it though.
What?
Like this ability to like be authentic to yourself and like actually want to help people. Whereas I just like kind of like ignore emails when people ask me questions.
I think it's because you actually want to, you have to want to help people.
Yeah, you do. Like you do. But like that's the point. It's like it works really, like it truly works well for you.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas it would not work well for somebody else.
I work with my nature. Like, yeah. And you work with your nature.
Right.
Good, you know.
Which is not helping people.
Play to your strengths.
Yeah, but it's helping. Is it? Do you feel like it's more for yourself than it is for others, like what you share online?
Oh, I'm, yes, very selfish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that is not something I'm proud of, but it is, like, actually kind of honest. I started doing everything, like Flickr. Like, I think it was the first time I actually started uploading true, intimate moments of my life. Mm-hmm. And it was to document it because I am afraid of forgetting things. And that is looking inward. That is not looking outward.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, social media is a vanity place to exist. And I wish I had something more that was like, I believe in the community.
Dude, have a
and all of you, thank you, each and one of you, for coming. all of you who subscribed to Jessica's mailing list who came. but like, I think I share also because I do get a response, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, it is really fun. I've met some of the most amazing people in my life because of it. There's no question it has impacted my career. It would be really, I would love to meet someone who said it didn't impact their career.
I think also Jen and I were, like, early chat room people. And I think that there just hasn't been, like, Twitter is our chat room.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Like AOL, Yahoo chat rooms.
I was an MIRC chat room person, but.
Yeah. Wow, that's, I'm old, so I don't even know what that is. It sounds cool, though.
It was old. So you are appropriately old for it.
All right, good.
You just missed it.
I just missed it. Yeah. I didn't really have internet. We were poor. All right. Let's see.
But like how has it impacted your career, do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I found to be interesting is that like a lot of like once I started getting a ton of followers, I get people all the time that ask me like super vapid questions like, how do you get followers? Like, do you sign up for these things to get followers? And I was like, I say things and then people either like them or they don't like them, and if they like them, they tell other people about them, and then maybe those people like them too, and then they just start coming. And like that's been the thing that's interesting about like my social media world is that everybody's there on purpose. Like I was never a recommended user on anything.
Right.
Like I have friends that were like recommended people on Instagram and they have like 4 million followers or whatever, but half of their people are just like mindless robots, and all of my people are my people.
Well, I think there's something you do really well. Which I've talked about before with other folks, says like I feel like you give gifts to the internet, and I think you both do in different ways. Like, you know, should I work for free? Don't fear the internet. All of those things that you probably didn't need to do, and it helped a lot of people, and they appreciate it. And there's a certain thing where like, if my dad has a quote that he's told me when I was younger, and it's like, help enough other people get what they want, you'll always get what you want. And I think there's an aspect of what you do that like really helps people in the stuff that they maybe didn't know or didn't know they didn't know. And they appreciate that. And I think there's also with you, Jen, is like you're putting yourself out there in very vulnerable moments a lot of times and sharing that and being, most people would never think to do that because we all are like, no, I don't want someone to know that I'm not perfect and I don't want someone to know that I'm struggling with this or this. And I think there's a sincerity in that that is also a gift to people. And I think you probably get reactions from people that way.
I think especially with like the kid posts from early on and pregnancy posts and things like that. Because I mean, like you post some real intimate stuff in that sphere.
Oh
and,
my.
And but the thing is, it's like.
Like real.
What's crazy though is that I find that like women a lot of times tend to be like, ooh, that's a lot, you know, because they picture themselves in that role. But I find that actually men are so open to it and not in like a gross way, but in like a,
sometimes
in a gross way, but mostly in like I would never find out about this way, you know, like
like breastfeeding. Yeah. I had never seen breastfeeding until I saw your Instagram feed.
Me either, actually.
It was day one.
It was crazy. Well, there's like two points there that are interesting, right? Like I do find that dads assume that they can ask me about my vagina more. Right? They just like, oh, so yeah, vaginal birth.
They're like, we're on the level. We're on the level.
Vaginal birth. And right. There's like this presumption that like, you know, and what do I care? I actually have no, like, sure, I'll tell you about the blood and the placentas, but.
Because you posted it.
Because I posted it and there was my birth announcement. But but there was another point that you made about, so I feel like there's low risk in some of those sharing. Like
low risk
for me because there is a lot of like propaganda out there about how important breastfeeding is, right? And so like for me to share that I'm breastfeeding is no risk, but for me to share something about how I'm having difficulty breastfeeding or how I hate it, it's the worst, it makes your nipples chafe and they bleed and your babies cry, like no one, that's more high risk, I think. So I think like the breastfeeding is like, I don't even do it anymore. I didn't even like it. But like people associate me with it. So it's like not become part of my identity, which is really interesting. But everyone has their own relationship with it. And actually I embrace the flaws because I, like I said before, like I do it before someone else can. And other people like need to cling to something that is beautiful, right? Because it is such an ugly part of being a parent.
Right.
And I think there's something to love about that as well. I just can't live up to it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's
all part of the experience.
Well, yeah. I also
to
found
deny it is like, it's not enjoying the whole thing or enjoying or not enjoying it and accepting it and going through it.
Yeah. I took all the drugs, by the way. I take the drugs.
Oh yeah.
Immediately. I mean, even if you're not pregnant, just take the
drugs. I got an epidural before I came up here.
I feel really like, I think it's amazing that there's so many like hurrah working women, look at this person's perfect life, she has it all, whatever. There's like lots of these lifestyle blogs that like celebrate like amazing people, but I felt like you only saw the success stories because people needed that as like an aspirational thing. But when I saw it and I didn't have it, I got like so discouraged and so weirded out.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Just because it was like, oh my God, like I fucking hate being pregnant. Or like, I don't have, like my mom told me how like when she breastfed me, she like cried every time because it was so beautiful. And I'm like, and I was like, okay. And then like, I'm like, when I was breastfeeding my daughter, she was like, all fucking business. Like didn't even look me in the eyes, was just like, okay, done now. And I was like, this is beautiful, I guess, you know? And so it just
I
felt so like that I had to do so much stuff because it's like required if you're gonna be like a modern parent that cares about their child or whatever. But you can't talk about the fact that like, if it's a required thing, you can also kind of fucking hate it.
Yeah. I mean, my mom did not breastfeed me and smoked in the like hospital smoking room immediately after with all the other like expecting fathers.
And so that's she's a like, great scene.
It's a good scene.
1985.
With the like IV like in there. So like it was it, like so that pressure didn't exist on me. So like really, I don't even know why I breastfed. You're supposed to?
They were hungry?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I just had so many, like, all of my friends had, like, no drugs births, and they were like, it's amazing, you feel so connected to your body and so powerful. And, like, when I was in the middle of, like, giving birth, I was literally vomiting with every contraction, and I was like, I don't feel powerful, I feel terrible, this is awful. And then so, like, I got the drugs, and everything was great. But it was...
Is anyone pregnant here?
Yeah.
This is real talk.
Yeah, it's real talk.
So...
I love childbirth, actually. I had a really good time.
Yeah?
I did.
Like Jennifer has twins, it should be noted.
Oh, yeah.
Also.
Let's
so I had two.
You have twins, Fox and Philomena.
Yeah.
Great names.
They are awesome.
How old are they now? Like, a year and a half?
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't do the month thing anymore. So I just like, almost two.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. They're like kind of dumb for two-year-olds, you know? But I can't say a year and a half because then they'd be really smart for a year and a half old, and I can't put them in that place of like achievement
in betweeners.
So,
yeah. That place of achievement.
Yeah, no, you got to keep them, you know, down there. I don't know what I was talking about. What was I talking about?
I don't know, the age of your children.
Yeah.
We're just talking acknowledging that you have children. Yeah. We figured that out with the whole labor thing.
Yeah.
But, oh, no. I loved it.
I loved being pregnant. I fucking loved it. Everyone does anything you want. It was the best part of my husband and I's relationship. It was just like really exciting about this thing we didn't know was going on. And now we're in couples therapy. So, you know. And
it's because you have twins.
It's because of the twins, yeah. And it was really amazing.
This is
it was really
fault.
Good. Yeah, he'll never listen to this, so it's fine. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was really, really awesome. So, like, but pregnancy isn't easy for a lot of people. So that's why I talk about, like, low risk. Like, it was easy for me to talk about the pregnancy because, fuck, I was so lucky.
Yeah.
And a lot of people aren't. And so, you know, it was just easy. It was truly easy.
I had, like, death by a thousand scratches pregnancy.
Yeah,
it wasn't, like, no one thing was really bad, but it was... The only thing that was really bad is, like, this will be my overshare of the night that I don't think I've shared very much often.
Okay.
But, like,
I'm nervous now when you really set
it
up like
I had super bad insomnia. Like, I don't sleep the same ever again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my daughter has been sleeping through the night for, like, over a year, and I still am up, like, halfway through the night all the time.
Is it more out of concern?
No, it's, like, a hormonal thing. Oh, okay. I'm just, like, totally, my reset button has not figured itself out.
And how old Ramona's?
She's 17 months, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But... I immediately started waking up every hour and a half all night long. So that like screwed me up so much that I was like basically hallucinating during the day and would cry like randomly because I was so tired.
How did that affect your work?
It made me take on projects that I knew were not as high brain power for sure because I just didn't want to fuck it up.
Right.
And then, but the other thing is I had real bad acid reflux and like I couldn't eat within 6 hours of bedtime and I was on Prilosec like the whole time. And one time when I was sleeping, the baby kicked my stomach while I was sleeping and I barfed in my mouth.
Overshare.
That was my overshare.
I like it. No, it's good. We got to real
We've
stuff.
We've all thrown up in bed.
We've all thrown
Come
up.
On.
And, yeah, it's cool.
When a baby kicks the content of your stomach out of your mouth.
Yeah. Wow. That's such an awesome ninja visual.
Yeah.
The kid just nailing it. So, all right. So once you had your kids, did it affect your work? Did it affect your career? How did it? Did you go back? Like,
well,
I know you've talked about it a little bit. That, like,
yeah, I mean, at first it didn't seem to. I mean, it had an impact because whenever you take any sort of break as a freelancer or like person that runs your own business, it takes a while to kind of ramp back up. Because when you take if you're taking vacation for a month, you have to start saying no to clients like a month before that to like make sure everything's wrapped up. And then when you're on vacation, if you're smart, you're not like accepting new jobs and doing whatever because you're on vacation and you're enjoying it.
Right.
So I wasn't like actively seeking new work while I was out on maternity leave. But then when I went back to work, it was kind of a slow roll. But the main thing that was the really weird thing that I had a hard time with and I don't like at all is that when I was out on maternity leave, I was sharing like a ton of stuff about the baby and my life and whatever. And I was getting so much good feedback from like, you know, other moms and women that were like, oh my God, it's so good to see such a real perspective, blah, blah, blah. And that was awesome. And I was like, I'm all empowered. This is great. Like, yeah, go women. This is excellent. And like, so I started doing that, but then like I went back to work when she was 3.5 months old And then it was like 6 months, and then it was like 9 months, and then it was like she was a year old, and I was still like not really getting all that much work. And I was getting emails from clients being like, hey, Jess, I don't know if you're back at work yet, but. Right. And like for every email like that I would get, I knew that I wasn't getting like 10 requests.
Well, so like, would a guy get those emails?
I know, exactly. Oh, yeah. And so that was the thing that I was struggling with, because I share a studio with Eric Marinovich, who's a lettering artist, and he's a dad of two. Yeah. And like I was seeing him when he came back from work after his daughter just like fending away calls. Like, oh, I know, I have a new baby. They're like, oh, I don't care. You know, like, yeah. And it, in one way, it was like really respectful of clients to like appreciate the fact that like I could be off. But in like, you know, at the...
Disagree.
Well, I mean,
because
no one said it like maliciously, and truthfully, I was not promoting the shit out of myself, because I never have. You know, like my promotion has always just been me like existing in the community and like doing public speaking stuff. I'm never like sending out promos or like being like, check out my work, blah blah blah, because that's not how I.
But you're assuming that it is because of things that you have done. And what the reason I disagree is because I think it's a cultural thing.
No, it is a cultural thing. It's a cultural thing. So like the expectation, and this is the thing that bothers me too all the time, is that like people constantly ask me like, oh, so wait, you still have the studio? Like people are like surprised that I still have my studio in the city now that I'm a now that I'm a parent. Not even that I still work. It's that they're surprised that I don't work from home now that I have my daughter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why would I give up my studio? Like, why would anything in my life really change? Like, why would my business change that significantly? If you know I have childcare, you know that I'm working every day, whatever. Yeah. But I ended up having to like, I almost thought about doing a total huge purge on Instagram and like taking down every photo of her and like being a curated person.
Yeah. It's gonna be hard to like even think about that.
It's really hard. It's really hard to think about it, because that's not who I am. Like, that's not like who I want to be.
You can't change it. It's not going to come from you.
Yeah.
It is absolutely...
No, but the thing is, though, like, the second I made a conscious decision, I'm like, I'm not posting any more photos of my daughter. I'm only posting photos of work. I will actively try to post something work-related that I feel fine about and I'm not being, like, self-promoting and weird about.
Yeah.
I will actively try to do that a couple times a week. And it was a sea change. Within, like, 3 weeks... like my work schedule started filling up again. And it was like, as soon as I started ignoring the fact that I was a parent, all of a sudden work was fine again.
It's fucked up.
Yeah, it was totally fucked up. It's super fucked up.
Super fucked up.
Well, is that, like, you had a full-time job at the time, and then you took off, and then you went back. So, but you take on freelance work too. So did you find
that
changed?
I was not prepared for that perception. Again, because I'm so vain. Truly, like, I did not really appreciate this understanding that, like, the default is the mother takes care of the kid before their career, and it is biological. I cared about those kids more than in my career. Like, it was weird. Yeah. I love my job. Oh, I fucking love working. And so it was weird. And then as soon as, like, they became annoying, I was like, oh my God, my career. And I...
How long did that take?
Yeah, not long.
Okay, yeah.
I got really desperate. And it wasn't because I was getting less work, because I do have a full-time job, which gives me a huge luxury, right? Especially in the state of California.
It's a really different experience as a full-time employee totally than different. It is as self-employed.
I started getting a couple emails before the kids arrived on a stork. And it was things like, hey, I want to work with you before you have children. And I was like, excuse me?
You're
going to get soft? Well, like, I get it. Like, people are casual. I'm casual. I get it. But, like, it still triggered certain things in me. And I was like, something's being said here. I should probably digest it, but I'm not fully appreciative of it. And then, so I didn't make any work. And I saw my friends making really interesting work. You were still working. Ramona had not been here yet. And I was like, fuck, I haven't made anything in like 5 days. And so that's when around the time Slack came out. Or maybe it had been out for a while. Anyways, it's when I started using it. And it was awesome because I happened to be friends with people who were all over the world. And so they would be up at 2 a.m, at 5 a.m, at 6 a.m. You know, like all, and I would be able to talk to them. And it was through that created a Medium design blog with Mike Montero about like just advice that we can offer. Yeah, deardesignstudent.com. And we started offering advice to really anybody, despite the title. And that helped me feel, it was so important, that I felt like I could contribute professionally to the world and I could do it with my right hand while breastfeeding. Right? I couldn't draw. I couldn't do, I couldn't be creative. I was truly a slave to my children on the couch. Like, yeah. A lot of women are able to leave after a couple weeks. I did not leave my house for 12 weeks. And when I left my house, I was
like, literally left her house.
Yeah.
Like, not, was, like, out like literally
out
I,
the door for the first time.
I did, it was not the right choice, obviously. Like, my mother came, and she's like, you should really go outside more. And I was like, you didn't have twins, and you didn't breastfeed. You don't know my frame of reference right now. And, you know, and like, my husband is incredibly supportive and was really fantastic. I just, like, it was a mental thing. I really did feel like if I left the house alone, I had two ticking time bombs in my stroller, and I couldn't leave the house. So it was a really hard first 12 weeks. Oof, it was hard. But so being able to contribute in that capacity was really important to me. Though professionally, I will say women get screwed when they have children. Universally. Like, if you are worried about your career after you have kids, you have a reason to be worried. Okay? That being said, you should still have kids. There's never a good time to have kids. You can only control so much in your life. But it's about being aware of it. And as Jess has mentioned, like, being cognizant of, like, the what you do and how you share it and, like, how you communicate motherhood versus your professional life. And sometimes it means separating them. For me, it has meant combining them. Like, I truly feel like I have found some more, motivation through parenthood in a different kind of way than you have. You have, like, a billion followers, so it's completely different, right? Like, a very different kind of sharing where
I think also, too, like, there's a real difference between me having to bring clients in to pay me and you having a steady paycheck. Right.
Totally.
You know, still doing freelance if you want to, but, like, you don't have to worry that your boss is going to not be interested in you anymore if you, like, post too many kid pics.
Now I am. No, absolutely right. Completely not comparable, and I would never compare the two. Although I just did.
Yeah.
It's all right. So, but it is. It's like an actual fact. Like, especially in San Francisco, you know, a lot of really great tech companies offer, what, like 4 months of time off? Men take 2 to 6 weeks. If that. And it's this perception that, like, when a man has a child, he wants to work more to support the family. And when a woman has a child...
Though I will tell you something. I forget... Where I read this, I listened to a lot of podcasts, so I'm going to assume it was a podcast and not reading. But it was about, if anyone in the crowd also read this article, let me know. It was about tenure in a college on the East Coast. I think it was Boston University.
No, I read this.
And it was about how they gave the men and the women equal tenure, six months off, that were tenure track people. They gave them 6 months paternity or maternity leave while they were, like, doing their tenure application because they wanted to be real progressive and be like, oh, well, you know, like, fathers should be fathers, like, all this kind of stuff. Yeah. But what they found over time was that, like, if you are a mother, you cannot do anything but be a mother in that time. Like, if you're breastfeeding, especially. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you take 6 months off, you're not taking 6 months off to, like, to write your dissertation or to, like, have a woodworking project or whatever. Yeah. You're taking 6 months off to, and even the crowd can laugh about that. You're taking 6 months off to, like, literally sit around your house with your top off. Like, that's what you're doing.
Right.
And
buy good lingerie, ladies.
Yeah. And so the issue with this tenure thing was that they found that men are super, like, my husband is so fucking helpful. He's like the best father. He's super awesome. Like, couldn't have asked for, like, it was totally, like, unfolding, wow, you're even more awesome than I thought you could have been.
He's pretty awesome.
He's really awesome.
He's great.
With that said, there's only so much that they can contribute. Right. And so, like, he was all in at first. Like, we both took this, like, he took 2 months off and then saved another 2 months for when she was older so he can, like, get to know her better. And that 2 months was, like, amazing for me because that's when you're really in the shit, you know. But then after that, like, it starts getting a little bit more manageable, and it really just is all kind of on the mom, and the dads have a lot of extra time. And in this study, the dads who were tenure track were taking extra time to write papers. They were taking extra time
for
to do the work
for
themselves because they had it, because they didn't have to do all the stuff that moms have to do.
It's also biological,
so
though.
It actually ended up setting the women back, like, 15 or 20%.
Because they had 6 months.
Because the men had more, like... done. You know, like they like basically worked harder, therefore were rewarded. Because in America, I mean, there's really laws about it. You can't give people promotions if they're not like if they're not performing or if they're not qualified. Like you can't give a job to a woman if she's less qualified than a man.
So what are the things you are doing or can do now that have like helped your career and kind of overcome those hurdles? Or have you, like you said you posted less, which someone who's so forthcoming on social networks, it's got to be a little bit hard to feel the need to censor yourself because it's affecting you.
It is really hard. Another thing that I've sort of like noticed and what I've taken advantage of here in San Francisco is that there are a lot of really, really awesome women in this town. Like it is like high saturation, really awesome women. It really is. And like super crazy power ladies, mega smart. When like women have retreats together, we could basically be like, you know what? Let's just make our own town here and just do whatever. Because there's just that many awesome people. And the thing about that I found to be like really helpful is that one, it's like just good to be around awesome women. I never was really like Jen was one of my only lady friends in New York because we were like just like a smattering of girls and then like a bunch of dudes and we were all friends, but we all sort of felt like kind of gender neutral about it. I feel
No, everyone was asexual.
Everyone was kind of asexual.
Yeah.
But I never felt like being a woman negatively impacted my career until now. And it isn't even just because of motherhood. It's because of being in your 30s or older, where when everybody starts partnering off and being married, it is inappropriate to hang out with married dudes. Or like, you know, like you just can't have those friendships that you had in your 20s.
Right.
And then what ends up happening is that if you don't have a super awesome power lady network, you end up just like making friends with like the powerful dudes' wives who are maybe not in your same sphere or like not interested in what you're into. Like all women are cool. Like, I mean, it's like cool to get to know people, but it's just like that doesn't...
I'm having something in common.
Yeah, I mean, you have something in common and you're you know, devoted to your career. You have aspirations beyond... you know, family and stuff. I mean, I do truly feel like if you want to be a stay-at-home parent, like I 100% respect that because it is a vocation. It is like the clergy. It is not something to take lightly because if you get forced into it, that fucking sucks. It's like it really is kind of the hardest job in the world and no one wants to hate their job for 15 years. And so people that choose
18?
To do it, yeah. Well, no, I mean, I'm on the assumption that like when you have teenagers, they just are, you don't hear from them for years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. My brother basically like slept until 3 p.m. and then was like awake, played video games with his friends, then left the house.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Amazing.
That's not really parenting anymore.
Yeah. I want that right now.
Yeah. You want that right
now.
Really important to have female friends when you're in your 30s and 40s, and it becomes really important for everybody to like lift each other up because
I've even found that it's important to be honest with each other. Like,
yeah.
You know, I've had times where I talk to my friends and we start talking about whether it's going to therapy or shit we're struggling with, and you're like, oh, you're going through that too? And no matter what it is, it's nice to know that there's other people going through that. And then it gives you the confidence, the reassurance, the kind of like just to know it's okay. And I think they're, you know, going back to social media and all that stuff, there's a need, I think, for all of us to feel perfect. That's totally unrealistic. And to be around other people who are honest about themselves and who they are and what they're capable of or not capable of, like we need that. And I think that goes a really long way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any lady friends.
Huh.
Most of my friends are dudes. I mean, Jess excluded, obviously, not just because you're on stage.
I'm kind of a dude.
I mean, like, I don't know. I have not met those amazing women that you're talking about, partially because I go to work and then I go home and I don't meet anybody, period. And I work with a lot of dudes. So, like, my experience is uniquely different in that, like, I find the comfort of dads more relatable than mothers. And I don't know if that's because I'm resisting something that I feel like is being imposed upon me or because I just have always preferred dude company.
Yeah.
Or because I live in San Francisco and they're just like more dudes. And their wives are busy with their careers and they don't have time to go to meet me at a bar. But that's my experience. And I love it. I mean, like, I don't know if I wish I knew more women, but I will say when I was in the throes, I did find myself talking to
women that I wasn't necessarily close with, but had also had babies around the same time, and suddenly we were very intimate about things that were like wives of friends that yeah. I never talked to. And I will always think of them fondly, and it's just like a intermediate friendship, and it is honest and true and real, and it is convenient. But that is like the nature of that friendship, and it worked. And now I'm still friends with dads. Yeah,
it's like finding your people at the time you need your people. And that changes totally. Different chapters of your life. And it's why like most of us aren't friends with our high school friends anymore.
Yeah.
Or elementary school friends, because they were friends because we grew up within a 10 block radius of each other, not because we had similar career and ambitions and interests, you know? So going back to career stuff, do you guys feel like you're both very ambitious people? Do you feel like there's a danger in ambition? Like, I've been thinking a lot lately, like, you know, I'm like, oh, I'll be happy when blank. I'll be happy if blank. And I realize there's a certain, when we're constantly aspiring and you have these goals, is there a certain level of ignoring what's currently happening and a lack of being present? At least for me, I'm finding that happening. Do you find that with what are your goals now? What are you working towards?
Well, I don't actually know if I ever really had like long-term goals. Like, I'm not a 5-year plan person. Yeah. I am now because I have to be, because right. like my lifestyle has changed.
You have a mortgage.
Even mortgages, I'm always like, whatever, if we move in 2 years, as long as the house doesn't go down in value, no big deal, you know?
Yeah.
But I never really was like, well, someday I will occupy the helm of this crazy company or whatever. Right. Like, that's not really how I've ever thought.
So you've just kind of gone project to project and seen what's interested you? And
I let what my current interests are influence what I want to do, because if I work with those, I'm going to devote myself more fully to whatever it is that I'm doing, rather than setting myself up for something in the future when maybe I'm not actually interested in that thing anymore.
Right.
Which is really common, like, not to constantly bring it back to the parenting stuff, because I really do feel like I am not a person that is like parenthood has taken over my life. Like,
right.
I feel very that's a separate world for me, and like yeah. it is a role that I play, but it's not the only role.
Yeah.
I just totally diverted myself, and now I'm blanking on where I was going to go.
I wasn't listening to what you're saying.
Fuck!
That's amazing. That's amazing.
I remember
ambition?
Now. So it has to do with when you're a parent, you get all these ideas. You're like, oh my God, you know what I need to do? I need to make like the world's best of this thing that I need right now that my daughter is so into, but this thing sucks and it's ugly. And then like the second she's not into it anymore, you're like, okay, moving on. Yeah. And so like, yeah. I think that if you plan too far ahead and you set these big goals for like, oh, I'm going to do this thing in 5 years that I'm interested in now, by the time you actually get there, yeah. you're like...
A totally different person.
Yeah. So like, if I don't think of being in the now, then I feel like I'm only working at like 70% strength, like all the time.
Right. How about you, Jen?
Yeah, ambition's a funny thing. It means different things, obviously, to different people. And we've talked a lot about this idea of like in New York, you'll meet someone and they're like, yeah, I'm making some posters, screen printing some posters. And you're like, cool, that sounds like a fun project. And you meet someone in San Francisco yeah. and they're just like, I'm going to make the new taxi company called yeah. Uber. And you're like...
I'm
cool.
going to disrupt
gonna
this
posters,
industry.
You know? Yeah. You know, like, I just want to make a zine. Both are ambitious,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And the scale of it is different. And it, like, everything people, especially, at least what I'm finding, is, like, your ambition and career does not go like this. It doesn't even go like this. It's, like, three-dimensional, and it's more like this into, like, this big, messy knot. And I find comfort in that, right? Like, you, like, let yourself that you have only so much control over things, and yeah. you
that's,
can still be ambitious
yeah.
and not think about, like, I'm going to be in charge of something. I can just be ambitious and, am I ambitious? I don't know. Competitive is an interesting
yeah.
alternative
yeah.
word to be using to
Are
describe
you competitive?
Things. Yeah, fuck yeah.
Well, all right, so there's this whole thing with, like...
Only with people that, like...
Do you have a nemesis?
Oh, yeah.
Who?
Like, I would dignify this person.
you won't even say their name. Rhymes
no,
with.
It's funny. I do feel like I am friends. I am so fortunate that I have met so many interesting people in my life and in my career. And I am oddly not competitive with the people who you would think I would be. because they're my friends. Like, I actually feel like a true, honest, intrinsic, like, this person would never do anything to harm me. This person may choose themselves over me, but this person would never hurt me. And I feel like I get competitive with people who are strangers more than with friends. My best friend, there's no one in the world who's better at what she does. And I'm not competitive with her, which drives her crazy. Because I should be competitive with her because she's the best in the world, you know? And I mean, I don't know how you and Russ are too, but like even both our husbands are kind of in the industry, right?
We can't work on same projects.
It's really, fuck, you want to be married to someone who you can like, you know, have a good, you know, collaborative relationship. I mean, you and your wife have a good...
Yeah, we're both art directors.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not anymore. I'm doing this, but...
Right.
But yeah, it's hard. She was a few years behind me, and as soon as her career like bypassed mine, I was like, yeah, I give up. I'm not even trying. I'll do something else. I'm going to start a company now because I can't even compete. So,
but I think that's interesting, with especially with your husband or with your wife, is I really feel like we've adopted this sort of leapfrogging ability for our careers, where like even coming to San Francisco, like that was not my choice, in case that was like not clear. It was...
Me neither.
And it isn't about like this being his time versus this being my time, but this is like us like sharing our lives together and like being like, this is like each other's moments, and understanding that things don't, like I said, like go this way or go this way. It's like just totally not.
That's very hard to do when you're in a relationship,
yeah,
by the way, because it's especially with two people who are ambitious or competitive or how we want to describe it, you're really focused on your thing. And so I think it's hard to stay aligned as you're doing your thing and still support each other and lift each other up and leapfrog each other and
all
that.
I think it's really rare that both people in the relationship have the same level of ambition.
Yeah.
Like I think it's...
And success. Yeah.
And success. It's very rare, because even with all the like super successful like women moms or whatever in the Bay Area, like there's this like secret Facebook group that's like the cool moms group.
I'm not part of it.
It's all like
don't apologize.
I sent your name over for an invite.
Don't even.
They might have checked all your your boob pics on Instagram and been like
she's aggressive.
But all like the women on like in the group make jokes that it may as well be the like introverted men's club, you know, because the thing that everybody has in common, except for a few of us outliers, are that like all these women are like, I'm going to go speak in Bali at this conference. And their husbands are like, great, I'll come and take care of the children. And like, that's why so many of them are able to like be incredibly successful entrepreneurs, is because they have that support network. Yeah. And I think when you're in the situation where you both are really ambitious and you both have really good careers, that's when it's really tricky, you know, and you really do have to do couples counseling, or you have to talk about it constantly.
You have to communicate
all the time, because
which is easier said than done.
Yeah. It's really easy to feel like you're a victim of your circumstances, even if you're in like the best situation ever, just because you didn't choose it. You know, like it's just a thing.
Well, there's this conflict of wanting to support someone you care about, but also being jealous of them at the same time. And you're like, what the fuck are they? Why do they get to go outside today?
It's so good. It's kind of true, right? Yeah. Do you feel like I was realizing recently that like it kind of sucks that design has a scorecard. Like there's a lot of people probably here that look at your work and are like, oh wow, that's amazing. They have tens of thousands of followers and they're doing amazing stuff. I only have 500 followers, and are comparing themselves to you, or comparing themselves to someone who's 2 years ahead of them that has 5,000 followers or 10,000 followers. Like, how do people avoid that, or avoid the feeling of being inadequate because of whatever their Instagram count or their Twitter count is?
Well, I think like
other people,
definitely do not judge yourself based on your social media presence, for sure. Like, I think, you know, people get there in different ways. And also, like, not everyone wants that. You know, right. If you're a person that is a really private person and you're like, oh, man, I don't have value as a human being because I don't have 200,000 Instagram followers, but I choose not to share anything because I hate sharing things. Like, that's a real conflict in terms of, like, what you perceive success as.
Well, a lot of people feel like
versus...
they need to now. Like, they feel like they need to. Like, hey, I'm not going to have a career unless I'm doing stuff that's either cool or trendy, or I'm getting people a following, I'm getting an audience, because, you know, like, you probably get a lot of work because of Twitter or because of Instagram. And like, I feel like maybe a lot of people feel like, shit, if I'm not doing that well, then I'm fucking up.
Well, I think the main thing, and the thing that's really amazing about creative careers is because they're not cookie cutter.
Right.
You know, like, I think that we probably all have family members in this room that, like, chose really cookie cutter careers and are now struggling like crazy, you know, because they decided to go down a path that thousands and thousands and thousands of people went down because it was like...
And you knew how to do
a checkbox to, like, oh, as long as I have this on my resume or as long as I go to this college, I'll be fine.
Or it was, hey, I have whatever life situation and I know how to do this thing. And then suddenly you're like, oh, well, now I want to pursue something else. And it, like, it gets hard to acknowledge that and to go and pursue that.
But this is what I'm saying is that because we weren't like, oh, okay, well, as long as my LinkedIn profile reads whatever, I'll be successful. We don't see our careers as that. We see our careers as we need to be more flexible. We need to figure out how to make up our career around us, you know. And what works for me or what works for Jen or what works for you is not what works for everyone. You know, everyone's like abilities and needs and talents are super different from one another. And the real problem is if you look at someone that you admire and say, I want that, but then don't actually sit down to assess, like,
if that's what you really want,
if that's what would be good for me, you know, like, because what would be good for someone else would not necessarily be good for you. Like, you might actually hate everything about that life.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's probably usually the case. If you try to pattern yourself after someone else, then you find out that that's not the life you want. But I think there's even, you know, one of the key things of being a creative person is adaptability and creativity
and self-awareness
and being able to navigate whatever the opportunities are, whatever makes sense for you, and being true to yourself. So I think that's I think a lot of people can find their own path, but it's it does, I think, get daunting for people when they see others ahead of them.
I mean, I disagree. I'm going to have all my retweets engraved on my tombstone. Yeah.
You're into it.
Yeah. No. I do think it's specific to each person, but I do find that people who give, who share, get in return.
They do. I mean, I think extroverted people that... are people have an easier time. I think
The thing is, I think there are ways for introverts to share online without it being about themselves. And I think you see that with open source technology, I think is actually a really good example of that, where it's not about them, it's about the code, it's about what they're sharing, it's about the content. But I do struggle. Like, I think, you know, obviously it favors the extroverts, it favors people who are self-aware, it also favors people who are completely not self-aware. to my amusement always. And I think it's changing. I think, like, we're moving to, like, things that are going to become more private and blah blah blah, and I'm not going to get into that, but I do think, like, at least in terms of our career, it was a really good moment that played to our strengths.
Right.
And I would be lying if I didn't worry about Twitter going bankrupt, whatever it would have to kill it. I don't know.
Because it's really super
important.
Yeah.
It's important to me in terms of my self-expression. Like, I think in 140 characters now. Like, is that, like, how I think? And it has absolutely informed my identity. And I will have to evolve with it. And I do my best to, like, experiment and play and do random little things. But I really love Twitter as a medium. In the same way, I hate that I'm saying this out loud. Like, a poet likes poetry, right? Like, I like Twitter as a medium.
Well, no, I think that the thing that I love
about
it... I
am a poet.
We're like old Twitter users. And not because we're old and we've been on there for a while, but because we use Twitter...
Before,
like,
there were handles.
Like old Twitter.
There were no at symbol...
I mean...
Anything when I...
It was all verbal. Like, yeah. I still use Twitter primarily as an all-verbal communication platform.
Right.
And most people now that are like have lots of followers and use it for promotion or whatever, it's a very visual platform for them. And I mean, really, like, if you don't post a photo with one of your tweets, like, you get like half as many people interested in it because we're visual people and we like stop and read the thing that has a picture.
It's
on
a different
it.
Media. It's totally different.
It's
now.
It's totally different.
Now you can actually do hyperlinks. Like, when we joined, you couldn't do hyperlinks. It was like.
And now they don't count the links towards your 140 characters.
I can't believe we're talking
as
about
of what this week. All right, so let's enough of Twitter. A couple last questions. Are you afraid you've peaked? Sorry, that's such a mean question. Yeah, that's such a mean question.
You don't. No.
Okay, good.
I don't think I mean,
seriously, you have to think about that?
Well, no, the thing is, I don't think that I don't think that my work has peaked, and I don't think that my, like, what I'll contribute to the world has peaked. But in terms of, like, my presence on the, like, scene,
sure,
I feel like I've probably peaked. I don't think I'm gonna get any further than what I am, or that what I was 4 years ago, or sure, whatever. Like, when I was really like, oh, let's have Jessica speak at everything because she's like the person, or mm-hmm, whatever. And I think that's done now. I'm not like the hot new thing anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm still on the scene. I'm still on the scene. But I don't know.
You are like a cockroach.
Can someone tweet that?
You will survive any design apocalypse, yes. We all know it. We all love you for it. It's a different thing. Like worrying about peaking versus like thinking you're going to peak. Like
I don't worry about it. Yeah, I'm just like, you know,
you're at peace.
You seem okay with it.
I'm okay with it. Yeah. I'm glad people are still around.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, but, and I'm happy about
right
it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if, like, you know, in 5 years or whatever, someone has, like, surpassed me in a major way. And I'm just like, well, whatever.
Yeah. What is success to you?
I don't have a funny answer to that. I don't know. I don't have a definition of success. I really don't. I'm trying to think of like a definite, like, what is success to me. I feel like I'm going to deviate a little bit from this question. I have a people would say a love-hate relationship with San Francisco. I would describe it more as a hate-hate relationship with San Francisco. I don't think the city loves me. I don't think I love the city. So for me, my definition of success is like, I want to find some sort of like connection to my surroundings. I want to feel like I love the city. Like, you put it, like, love is a tricky thing, right? Like, no love is easy. Like, real good love is like totally a mess. So like, for success, I like, it's about it being difficult, actually. Like success isn't about it being easy. And so I love a good struggle. And I love, what else do I love? Success is like, it's just insatiable, right? Like you can have a success here and like not be done, and like you just like, that was fine for them. That's how it was 2 years ago, right? You know, like that was not what my definition of success now is. And I don't know if I've really answered the question, but I don't think about it, and that helps me actually thinking about it.
I mean, in the greater picture, success for me is making things that I find meaningful, but that also other people find meaningful. Yeah. Like, whatever those things are. Yeah. Like, as long as they have an impact on someone.
Yeah.
And then on a more, like, just kind of personal, but not actually super personal, just in, like, a work personal way, like, feeling still excited and motivated by whatever it is that I'm working on. And so, for me, that has actually involved sort of taking a step back from, like, wanting to do bigger and grander projects, because I was just getting so intimidated to like start anything, because I just have less time now than I did in the past.
Right.
And focusing on like having those moments of like, I made a poster, I made a zine, where I'm just like, oh, I'm so fucking excited about this poster. And then I just shoot it into the world. And then I'm like, new project, not think about it anymore. Yeah. You know, like those moments again.
Yeah,
like,
it's just stringing those moments
together. If I could make sure that I don't go long stretches without having those moments, that's a successful career for me.
That's great. If you had to give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Go to therapy earlier. I mean, that would definitely be one of the things.
Yeah, that would help a lot.
For sure.
Lock your bike up.
Two U-locks,
not one.
They cut through the cable. No.
I'm taking you had your bike stolen.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No. I mean, advice to my younger self, go to the gym. No. be nicer, I guess. To myself.
Yeah, okay.
Not to you.
That's important.
Yeah.
This isn't about them. It's about you.
I actually feel like I wish my younger self was around sometimes to yell at my current self to like lighten up a little bit.
Yeah.
just because it is like you lose that crazy, like, I don't care, I'm just happy to be here, like, that
and
sense.
And it's going to work out no matter what.
Yeah. Or, like, I did so much stuff that was just like, I'm amazing, this is great, hello world, like, when I was, like, 22. And now I'm just like, I don't know if I want that to be on the internet forever. Maybe I should think about this. Is this important? Maybe it's not important. Let me think on it for the weekend, and then it just doesn't happen. And sometimes I just need 22-year-old me to be like, ah, who cares? Yeah. It's fine. No one will remember this by next
giving
week.
Giving yourself permission.
Giving myself permission to be a pig-headed 22-year-old again.
Yeah. And last question. How are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling pretty good.
Feeling good?
Yeah, I don't know. I
just hope my husband doesn't listen to it.
You said he was great.
Oh, like, he's awesome. Times. Love you, Alan.
All right, good. All right, well, thank you, Jen. Thank you, Jess.
Thank you, guys.
We're going to take some questions. Does anybody have any questions? Questions? Any questions? No questions? I'm gonna come out there. If anybody has a question, raise your hand. I'll give you the mic over here.
Yeah, I hope Mike has.
Did we really bum you all out about parenthood? You guys are like, nobody's having sex tonight. Yes.
Hi. Can you talk about freelancing versus working a full-time job?
Sure. Freelancing in the Bay Area is really hard. You know why? Because there's so many amazing jobs here. And there's so many amazing made-up jobs at amazing places. Like, you can kind of be like, hey, I'm pretty good at stuff. And they're like, we're always looking for people that are good at stuff. Do you want $200,000, amazing benefits, and 4 months paternity leave? Sounds great. And for me, like, freelancing here, the things that are the hardest are the, like, knowing that when you're at your desk, you have to be being productive. Like, it is such a luxury to just go to work and be like in fuck it mode and be like, it's cool, I'll do this tomorrow, it's not a big deal. When I go to work and I'm not productive, I'm like, I spent however many hundreds of dollars on childcare to like be at this desk, and I'm literally just fucking cruising a dead website for an hour. This
and
is
it
stupid.
It feels so good.
Yeah, and it feels
right
so good,
vein.
But it's so bad.
It's awesome. Yeah.
But the problems with freelancing in the Bay Area are we're in the worst time zone, just the worst time zone. New York people work like all the time and have meetings at 9 a.m. but need files by 6 a.m. or whatever. And so if I'm working on a super high pry job for East Coast clients, I have to keep crazy hours, or I have to be like super mega strict about like, I don't work on the weekends, I only work from 9 to 6, whatever. I am very strict about it. When you're a parent, like, giving up a weekend day is a huge fucking deal. Like, and it's not even because of my daughter. Like, I want to hang out with her on the weekend, but I do get a lot of time with her other times. It's just like, 2 weekends of that in a row can like destroy a marriage, basically. Like, it's like really intense, because it's like full day baby management is no joke. Whether you're like trained and used to it or not, it's like a big deal. So I only break those bounds if it's like 100% absolutely necessary. It has to be like a huge paying job, or it has to be so fucking cool that I would like regret it for 2 years if I didn't do it. And so few jobs fall into that territory that I will tell you none of those jobs have come to me since I have had a child. And then you can't work for Europe at all, basically. You're just on a different time zone. So they're getting into work and it's in the middle of the night for you or whatever. And then by the time they're leaving work, you're just getting to work. So it's just...
And Jen, you've freelanced and now you're full-time. You've been full-time
for
a while
both.
Now.
Actually, I did both. And it was a bad idea. No, I don't regret it. But it was like, I was pushing my limits. I was like, how far can I push this? And so when... let's see, when the kids were about a month born, my first book was published. I started working on it when I found out I was pregnant. So it was a pretty fast job. And I was like, well, I'm glad I could do it because I'm going to be a mom soon. Then, let's see, 8 months later, I got another pitch for a book. And I was like, I'm so desperate to prove that I am back in my career, I need to take this job in addition to my full-time job. So published another book. Comes out 2 weeks. It's on Amazon.com.
What's it called?
It's called The Origins of Almost Everything. I'm very proud of it. But the publisher is in London. So I relied on Alan so hard, because in the morning I needed to wake up and
take out my phone immediately and respond to emails. And that's because it was a highly collaborative project that I was working with reporters and photo editors and editors, and it was intense. It was hard. I was able to do it, but I had a lot of support. I had Alan. We had someone who took care of the kids. She came on the weekends. Alan would take the Saturday to sleep. I would take it to work. Or he would work. He would spend time with the kids. I wouldn't be able to do my job at all if I didn't have Alan or Bridget, who takes care of our kids. And I don't know how single parents do it.
Yeah, it's like unfathomable when
to me.
You
need family. You like my family's all on the East Coast.
Yeah, mine too.
I know they desperately wish they were here, but they hate the weather.
And also too, I mean, I grew up in like a small town in a small town in PA, and like the idea of having a nanny was like the most like she fucking snobby thing I could have even imagined. Like, I didn't grow up with anyone who had nannies. Like, everyone had a parent that stayed at home, or they went to daycare or something. And so even when I moved here and I started meeting people who were like getting pregnant and having kids and like were talking about getting a nanny, I was like, whoa, 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 is this lifestyles of the rich and famous here? Like, not really understanding that that's just like a reality if you're a two working parent household, because like in places like Brooklyn and the Bay Area, if you even want to get your kids into a daycare, it's like impossible. Like, you have to apply like 2 years before you're thinking about having a child, you know, because they're more reasonably priced than nannies. So it's like, and even getting a nanny, you end up having to like, you know, do some backdoor deals to like get somebody to decide to come to your house. It's crazy.
I will say though, like, if your career is important to you, like if it brings you life and it brings you passion, it like gives you meaning, it's worth paying someone most of your salary, so that you can do it.
Well also too, this is a thing that
if you can afford it, like this is from a point of privilege for us.
This is the thing though that I want to clarify, because women always say if you're willing to pay most of your salary to do it, and this is a huge thing. When you get childcare, you like women think of it as, oh well, I could be taking care of this child, so it's my salary that's contributing towards childcare, when really it's both parents' salaries that are contributing towards childcare, which makes you think of it totally differently. Like if you're thinking like, oh, I'm spending $30,000 a year on childcare, it's really hard if you're a freelancer and you're not making very much north of that. Like if you're young in your career and you're like, why am I even doing this? I'm basically profiting like $15,000 a year to like miss out on my kid's childhood. Right. And, you know, which is what people would have you believe. And, if you think about it like, oh, I'm paying $15,000 a year and my husband's paying $15,000 a year, or my baby's father's paying $15,000 a year, it's a lot easier to sort of forgive yourself for needing that childcare, because it's not just you. Like, it's not on you to do it.
Yeah. Do we have any more questions? I saw a couple of hands come up in the back. If you yell it, I'll repeat it on the mic. So what's the most surprising source of inspiration you found? Besides those pants, Jen. It's legit.
Well, honestly, I think the thing that surprises people the most about what inspires me is like most of, like I would say 90% of my inspiration for projects comes just from the project brief, you know, like, which is why I work with clients. You know, like I'm not a person that sits around and goes like, oh, I have a feeling I should do a work that is this thing. Like, that's very rare for me. So when I like rely on clients for inspiration of like what I want to work on. And when I get a brief that, and it just becomes very clear to me what the end result should be because of what their needs are. You know, so I think a lot of people like assume if you're a visual person and you make visual work that like a lot of your inspiration comes from visual research, when really most of my inspiration actually just comes from like subtracting all the things it can't be because of all the things it must be.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would agree with Dress. Like, I'm deadline focused, so that's where a lot of my inspiration, but really it's just like that's where the paycheck comes from. So in terms of like surprising inspiration, I don't know. I'm like, I go on like internet safaris. You know, I just sort of like follow a link to another link to another link. I know most people say go for a walk and your head will be cleared, which is great. That works for some people, but I find I'm very curious. I love the internet. And I find a lot of inspiration from it, both in terms of the actual, like, what is being written on it, the culture of it, the people of it. I like what I find there. So that's, I mean, it's not that surprising, but in terms of, like, client work, that's where I always have a reference. Like, oh, you're talking about that, and I'll be able to bring in, like, 15 other things that are, like, super tangentially related.
I did just go to that Drake concert recently, and whoever does his
the
stage
light balls,
design,
not his balls.
Like, yeah. That was some of the most inspiring shit I have seen in a real long time. It was like, I was just so mesmerized.
If you don't know what Drake's live show looks like, go on Instagram and search it. Oh. So it looks pretty crazy.
God, it
balls
is,
with LEDs
it
making
is a piece
patterns.
Of art.
And,
like, yeah. Everything is amazing. I was like great. Truly blown away.
I was a little sad.
I will say one thing. I'm trying to think of like, the actual curious place. It's actually talking to Uber drivers. That is a really, I mean, I don't generally like talking to strangers in general, just like a New York thing, just like you don't acknowledge each other, but there's like a forced thing when you're in someone else's car and you're like, you need to talk to them, and it's the only time, now that I work for the man, I don't have, like, I used to work for a newspaper, and when I worked for a newspaper, that meant no free coffee, and no free coffee meant that I had a bodega guy, and that bodega guy, Sam, shout out, and I saw each other all the time. I don't see that guy so much, so like, unfortunately, my chance to like really interact with the San Francisco community is in the Uber car a lot. I have a bartender who I love, Jim, shout out. But I do, that is one thing about San Francisco that I think is part of the problem is a lot of people aren't invested in the community that is around them. They kind of walk through it. It's really easy to. I see myself doing it, and I've only been at this company for about a month,
yeah.
2 months, and it's bizarre. It's really weird to feel like you live somewhere and not understand it. But I would say like I love talking to Uber drivers.
Well, and there's something to learn.
And from Lyft everyone. Drivers, yeah. I don't want to be
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And taxi drivers, all the union, all the, pro union.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of it. We got time for one more question. One more question, anybody? What was your first big job, and what did you do to celebrate it?
My true first big job was probably I drew a lot of illustrations for the IRS tax calendar in 2007.
Wow. You guys all have it, I'm sure, yeah.
It was only for like, it was for like the IRS to send to their special people or something.
The people they audit to make them feel better about
They're
it.
They're like,
yeah.
Here, have a delightful, whimsical calendar. I'm sorry,
Taxes are due in April.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I made like $15,000 off that, which was huge at the time for me. Like,
how'd you treat yourself?
I think that might have been when I bought my George Nelson desk for my, it was like my first piece of fancy furniture I ever bought.
It's kind of important to find those moments. Like, I remember the first day I quit my full-time job to go freelance, and I bought myself a pair of orange, white, and red Nike Dunks. And it was like, these are my freelance shoes. And I think I just, like, that was like 9 years ago. I think I just, like, donated them to Goodwill because I'm not wearing them anymore. But there's something kind of nice to, like, even if it's a small thing, to just, like, treat yourself to like your accomplishments. It's it's important to celebrate.
I definitely mostly paid my student loans, but
oh, yeah, that too. Yeah,
you know, I did give myself. I always give myself treat yourself moments. Yeah. I'm not shy on treat yourself.
No, you're not.
No.
No. Well, Jen, what was your first big job? How'd you celebrate?
I'm still waiting for it. I'm not even kidding. Just even hearing you talk, I'm like, that sounds like a good job. I'd take that.
Google's probably your first big job.
Still waiting on it. Yeah.
I mean, I remember even just like I was living in my grandmother's attic for quite a while in Queens, and I got a regular.
Wait, did you like? It was in an attic, Queens
true,
attic.
Like,
where, wait,
Frank.
The ladder.
It was like Anne Frank.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
It was like Anne Frank. This is a perfect way to couch the night.
Yeah.
With the C word, and then Anne Frank reference.
And she's still kicking it, and she's awesome, and I love still living in her attic occasionally when I visit. And I remember calling, like, even though I was working in the city. I remember calling my mom because I was like, I want to buy this vest and it's $40. And I wanted her permission, like, to treat myself with it. And I don't remember what the job was. I had the money. And she was like, of course, get your, this vest. And I bought the vest. Gave it to a friend later. I don't have it anymore. But I still remember it. He still has it and takes pictures of it in his closet to tease me. Because he understands the sentimental value. I lost it in a bet. It was a terrible story, actually.
Have you never like seen something that you wanted and calculated how many projects it would take to get that thing and then be like, it's cool. I'll just take on those extra projects. I've definitely done that.
Sure, you're just like, oh, I'm waiting on that check. That check will do it.
My wife would yell at me for that mindset. I'm like, that's 7 days of freelance.
Yeah.
And I would just do everything about how many days I had to freelance. She's like, that's not how life works.
Yeah.
You have to budget.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes.
And I'm like, but I'll work 2 weekends. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, these clogs are a spot illustration. No big deal.
Yeah. That's a very irresponsible way to think, guys. But it's the way to think. Thank you all for coming. We're going to hang out and have some drinks. And round of applause to Jess and Jen. Thanks to everyone who came out that day and to Jennifer and Jessica for being so honest with us. Thanks to Jared Nangle for recording the live audio at the event, to our editor, Dusty Elberts, and to Caleb Groh for our theme song. To read more about this episode, check out our blog, Free Range, on workingnotworking.com. You can also learn more about becoming a Working Not Working member on our homepage. Follow at WNotW on your favorite social media channel and tweet us with questions at the hashtag WNWOvershare. That's it for this episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.